listening to the Bronco Report Podcast, featuring the latest news and opinions on Boise State athletics. Brought to you by the Idaho Press Tribune. Keep it here at BlueTurfSports.com for up-to-the-minute coverage of the Boise State Broncos. Now, here's Boise State beat writer B.J. Raines for another edition of the Bronco Report.
Greetings, Boise State fans. Welcome to episode 8. Yes, we've already reached episode 8 of the Bronco Legends podcast. My name is BJ Raines. I'm your host. I'm also the Boise State beat writer for the Idaho Press Tribune and BlueTurfSports.com. Really appreciate you logging on here either through iTunes or BlueTurfSports.com to listen to the Bronco Legends podcast. iTunes is the easiest way. Just subscribe, and then each episode will be automatically downloaded to your smartphone or tablet using iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. So just go to iTunes and search Bronco Legends podcast, and it should pop right up, and you can just click there and subscribe. And we would appreciate it if you could please give us a quick rating and a comment. That would only take a couple seconds, and it helps us immensely in terms of the rankings for the podcast, so other folks might stumble across it when searching for Boise State stuff. So iTunes, there's also a link to subscribe on iTunes if it's easier for you, right there on the podcast page at BlueTurfSports.com. And again, you can listen to all of the extra episodes that we've already done. Brian Harsin, Chris Peterson, Kellen Moore. Got some great reviews from last week's interview with Jared Zebranski. He really opened up for almost an hour. So all the interviews are there at BlueTurfSports.com and on iTunes. Quick reminder, if you have any comments or criticism or guests you'd like to hear on the podcast, so feel free to shoot me an email. My email address is my name, BJ Raines, R-A-I-N-S, at IdahoPress.com. BJ Raines, R-A-I-N-S, at IdahoPress.com. So shoot me an email if you'd like to have a guest that you want to hear, or criticism, or anything. And we're also taking some small businesses, or any business of any size for that matter, that would like to jump on board as a sponsor. We do have a couple of small sponsorship packages available still. So if you think that letting thousands of Boise State fans hear some mentions during the podcast about your business, we'd love to talk to you. So you can shoot me that same email address, bjraines@idahopress.com, and we can talk to you as well. Okay, as I said, last week, Jared Zebranski was our guest on the Bronco Legends podcast. We're going to stick with that 2006 team, the 2007 Fiesta Bowl. One of his teammates from that game on offense, Vinny Peretta, is going to be our guest this week. And Vinny Peretta redshirted in 2004, played from 2005 to 2008 at Boise State, and was a part of that famous 2007 Fiesta Bowl. If you remember, it was 4th and 2, and obviously Vinny Peretta, the halfback pass to Derek Schumann, one of the most famous plays in history. It was the play right before the Statue of Liberty. Everybody remembers the Statue of Liberty play, but the 4th and 2 halfback pass, Vinny Peretta was the one that took the ball out of the backfield and threw that pass. So we'll talk to Vinny about that play and his career at Boise State. And he had a cup of coffee in the practice squad with the Minnesota Vikings. He tells a funny story about Brett Favre and the difference in their paychecks. A lot of good stuff from Vinny Peretta, who is now back in town and living in town as and he's in sales. You'll hear him talk about that as well. So great stuff with Vinny Peretta. And let's get right to it. Vinny Peretta, this week's guest on the Bronco Legends podcast.
Well, Vinny, appreciate you doing this, man. I guess, you know, we were just kind of joking around before we went on the air, but you're a dad now. You got a couple of young kids. How's life?
Life's good, man. Just here in Boise, Idaho, working away, and got my family. Got two young boys, Leo, who's 3, and Rocco, who's almost 1. So, yeah, just enjoying living here in Boise, and trying to get it figured out.
Trying to get the kids' songs out of your head once in a while at work, or are you still
singing? A lot of kids' songs, a lot of singing, a lot of reading books. It's awesome. I mean, hanging out with my boys, there's nothing better. They're just so innocent and so much fun, and
yeah,
it's awesome. I love being a dad.
And your wife, right, was a former BSU athlete as well?
Yep, my wife Jess, she played soccer at Boise State. Met her in the dorms. We dated throughout college, and
oh, cool.
Got married shortly after we graduated, and she's an Idaho gal, and I'm obviously from San Diego, and you know, we knew we were going to start a family pretty early, and we just decided staying in Boise was the right fit. Trying to move back to San Diego would have, you know, for a young family, it's tough to get started up down there. And so we stuck around Boise, and we love Idaho, and and all the people who live here. Everyone's so nice. So
we'll get back to Boise in a second, but you know, you mentioned being from San Diego, and your dad Ralph, you know, played in the NFL for what, 6 seasons?
Yeah.
You know, growing up just kind of in San Diego there, and what do you remember about, you know, just do you remember much about, I don't know how old you were when he was playing, do you remember any of that?
Yeah, so when I was born, my dad was finished playing.
Okay.
But every season the Chargers would have a Charger alumni day.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have a home game, and they'd bring all the alumni down onto the field, and they would be able to bring their kids down. So I remember growing up being on the sidelines. We'd get to watch like Junior Seau and Nate Tyrone Means and all those guys when they made a Super Bowl run, and I think it was 95. So mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. I was always proud to say that my dad played in the NFL, and I, you know, looked up to him, and yeah, it was awesome to get to experience that.
Now, what was he, guard, center? I know he was O-line. And actually, I mean,
yeah.
You know, Dan Fouts, right, was the quarterback, yep, for a lot of that time.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, he was a center.
Okay.
A lot different than the position that I played, obviously. Yeah. But, yeah, he played from about 1975 to 1980, so he got to play with Dan Fouts and
Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, he enjoyed it. He loved, you know, loved San Diego, and that's where he decided to settle down and raise his family.
So did he kind of, you know, direct you into football, or you just saw, you know, from those alumni days, or how did you kind of get?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, just being exposed to it, and obviously my dad's interest in sports and ball, and you know, as a kid having a good relationship with your dad, you always wanted to be like dad, you know. So mm-hmm. I remember growing up, everyone would say, what do you want to be? I said, I want to be a football player. So yeah, I mean, a lot of influence there with my dad. And, you know, he never pushed us into playing sports. He always let us choose. And I decided I wanted to play, and I started playing tackle football in eighth grade. And then he kind of helped guide me and teach me a little bit. And he actually helped me in the whole recruiting process,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, kind of directed me to Boise State.
Yeah, I was going to say, no Division I offers, right, coming
yep.
out of high school?
No.
Did you have some smaller, you know, FCS or
so
Division
II? So there was
or...
St. Mary's.
Okay.
It's a private school up in the Bay Area, and went up there for a recruiting trip, and they offered me some scholarship, and, you know, I was kind of set on going there. And then the head coach called me a week after my recruiting trip and said that they were dropping the football program.
Ooh.
So then I was either going to go walk on, you know, D1. I knew I could go play a ball, or go to college or just be a student at like Arizona State or something, go have
okay.
fun. And Boise State was recruiting me as a preferred walk-on. It means you have a spot on the team. And I figured, came up here, checked it out in the spring of my senior year of high school, and just really enjoyed it, got a good feel, and the coaches seemed like great stand-up guys, and they said, hey, if you come up and play and, you know, and earn it, we'll give you a scholarship. And
how many years did it take?
Words. So I think they gave me a scholarship after the first semester.
Okay, that's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
so
then.
I came
yeah.
up and proved myself enough to them
mm-hmm.
to say, hey, we want this guy to stick around. We better put him on or else he'll leave.
Did you have a teammate or something they were recruiting? Or which coach was recruiting you, or how'd they kind of find out about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so it was Coach Riddle.
Okay.
He's back now. He's
yeah.
the special teams coordinator. And when I was a sophomore at La Costa Canyon, we had a senior named Joe Wiegan who signed and committed, and he played up here at Boise State. And
okay.
So Coach Riddle kind of had a little connection there with my high school, and I don't know if you saw me on film or whatnot, and they didn't have any scholarships available or numbers with recruiting at mm-hmm. Whiteout, and they said, hey, we want you to come up and be a preferred walk-on. And my dad had been watching a lot of Boise State. That's when Boise was starting to climb a little bit.
Sure.
And, you know, just had that high-powered offense, and my dad's like, hey, if you want to go play, you know, in a high power of offense, he's like, that's the spot to go do it. You know, good fit. And they had little guys similar to me, like Tim Gilligan and TJ Akery, running around out there. And my dad said, hey, your game would translate off awesome in that offense. Let's go check it out. So came up here, checked it out, and yeah, just pulled the trigger, had a good feeling about it.
Were there any other D1 schools that were trying to talk to you about walking on?
Yeah, San Diego State wanted okay. me to go walk on.
That had to be kind of appealing, being in hometown.
Yeah, it was appealing.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to go there.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to San Diego State because when I was a junior, my quarterback, who was a senior at the time, Kevin O'Connell, he, you know, ended up being an NFL guy. He actually went to San Diego State,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of his primary target when I was a junior. So he was a year ahead of me. So San Diego State was recruiting me, And I'm like, man, they're going to offer me, you know, especially with my high school quarterback being there and kind of keeping that that connection going. Mm-hmm. And they never did.
Okay.
So I kind of had a little bitter taste in my mouth about San Diego State.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, you know, I don't want to go. I was thinking they probably think they could get me as a walk-on, but I said, hey, if I'm going to go walk-on, I'm going to go play on an offense that works better and a better program.
So that was 2004. Yep. Actually, just by doing some research, we're about 3 weeks apart in age. You're 1985, right? You're 04 high school graduate.
Yep.
And then you come in the fall of 04. That's the year you redshirt, right? I believe you're like special teams player of the year or something for BSU during practice and stuff.
Offensive, yeah.
Okay, offensive player.
Yep. Scout team player of the year.
Yep. And then you said they offered you the scholarship pretty much right away before you even stepped on the field then.
Yeah, definitely. I came in with a chip on my shoulder. I knew that I was going to have to prove myself, you know. So, yeah, I came into training camp, and I made some big plays and some scrimmages. And, you know, I remember at the time, Lee Marks, who's the running back coach, mm-hmm. he was going into his senior year.
Okay.
And he was a great mentor to me, and, you know, he saw something in my game and really was a good motivator and said, hey, Vinny, man, you're doing awesome, man. The coaches are talking about you and all this. So it was just nice to have his word and have his support and kind of say, hey, you know, once you know the coaches are talking about you, it motivates you even more to keep doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I came up and tried to prove myself early so I can get on scholarship.
And that first year in 05, I mean, you played, I think, all 13 games, mostly right on special teams and stuff, though. I know you were involved Summit on offense. And then that next year, as a sophomore, you really started to – you know, get more involved in the offense and stuff. And, you know, I know everybody talks about the Fiesta Bowl, and we'll get there, but what do you remember about that season in 06 before the Fiesta Bowl and some of the other moments or games? What was just that ride, you know, like being a part of? And did you guys go into the season thinking, you know, we have a chance to go undefeated? Or what was kind of the outlook of the team before the season?
Before the Fiesta Bowl season?
Yeah, before that sophomore year when you,
okay.
you know, I mean, you went undefeated, but, I mean, did you guys look at the schedule and go, we're going to go undefeated? Or did it just kind of happen out of nowhere? Or?
Yeah, so... I mean, we had a senior class that year that was awesome. It had been one of the best in BSU history. If you look at the talent there, and I think we had like four guys get drafted and a handful mm-hmm. as free agent signings in the NFL. So we knew that we had a solid team with great leadership and a lot of experience, a lot of returning starters. That senior class, they were one, and it was the focus of the team that year. You could really tell that it was going to be a good season, and a lot of people were expecting us to have a good season just mm-hmm. with all the experience coming back. So I remember working out in the summertime, a lot of player-run practices and just the focus, even before training camp even started. Like, we pushed ourselves. There was a lot of talent on the team, so guys were pushing each other to get playing time and competing. So definitely going to that season in particular, you know, there was a good feeling there. And then for me personally, after the season previously, so my first full year of playing
mm-hmm.
in the bowl game against Boston College, that was my best game that season. I think I had like four or five, some big catches in that game, you know, and
we kind were of driving you there. Forward.
Yep, and we were driving there at the end. I think I had a big fourth down catch from Z, you know, that kept the drive going. So we had a chance to win the game. So personally, I had a good game, and it was a good
springboard.
To go into the next season. So I was trying to,
Was there a game
jump?
Was there a game, you know, during that season, a game or two where, you know, you're losing in the third quarter and you guys had to make a comeback, or was there one that sticks out? I know there were a couple close ones, a lot of blowouts.
Fiesta Bowl season?
Yeah. I mean, was there any point where you know very easily might not have happened? You know, if you guys some things didn't go your way.
Yeah, there was San Jose State that year. I think, I don't know, it was one of the final games of the season, and we were undefeated. People were talking about us and our ranking, and we knew that if we went undefeated, we'd have a chance. And we were at San Jose State, and that was always a funky place to play because there wasn't a whole lot of people who would show up, and their fans were brutal, you know, and just the whole atmosphere was pretty unique. And that was a close game that season. Our kicker, Anthony Montgomery, kicked, I believe it was a game-winning field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate on a fourth down play. Zeke, you know, just like the previous year, Zeke hit me on a little slant over the middle. I think it was like fourth and seven. And I was able to catch the ball and get the first down. A couple plays later, we were able to kick the game-winning field goal. So, personally, for me, that was a play that I'll always remember. It was keeping that drive alive with Z putting a perfect ball on me and getting that drive.
I've always wondered, because of the Fiesta Bowl, you know, your name, Schumann, Zabransky, you know, Rab, Dryzen, you know, there's like seven or eight of you that everyone, you know, think of first of that game and that season because of those plays. Was there a guy or two on that team that maybe was underrated by fans or didn't get a lot of talk or still doesn't maybe that was a big reason why you guys were as good as you were that year?
Yeah, I mean, I think in that game in particular, like, you look at a guy like Legadu Nani.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy had a killer senior season. He got drafted, and a lot of people don't think of his name just because he wasn't involved in those three trick plays.
Sure.
But, I mean, he was a dude that year for us offensively, and that guy worked so hard because he came in as a quarterback and transitioned into wide receiver, and to swallow that pride pill, you know, could be tough for some guys, and you know, he was such a hardworking guy and knew that if he worked hard and played well, then he'd be able to take a jump into the league. So that guy, I mean, a lot of people don't think of him because he wasn't involved in the plays, but I mean, that guy had probably one of the biggest seasons on the offensive side of the ball than anybody.
You think about you finished the regular season undefeated, and how do you remember finding out you were playing Oklahoma? And did you know it was going to be Fiesta Bowl right away when you finished the undefeated season? Was it already kind of set up that way? And how did you kind of find out? What was your first thought when you thought, oh man, we're going to get a chance?
Yeah, I remember we were in Reno our last game of the year, and we knew that if we won that game and went undefeated, that we'd pretty much be going to the Fiesta Bowl. And
okay.
I remember there's a picture of a bunch of the DBs. After we won, they had like the Tostitos bag chips. So we knew we were going to go. And
but you didn't know you were going to play Oklahoma yet?
Or? We didn't know that we were going to play Oklahoma. It was the Big 12 champion that year, obviously. And so we knew that if we were to win, that we were going to go somewhere special. And, you know, once we had a Fiesta Bowl like viewing party or like a BCS show viewing party at the Taco Bell Arena that year.
Yeah.
And they announced it there. And so we knew. If they were putting together a big show at the Taco Bell Arena, we knew that it was going to be something big.
What was your first thought when you heard, you know, the big bad Oklahoma Sooners, you were going to get a shot at them?
Yeah. I mean, it was exciting because you grow up watching all these big-time teams, and, you know, we were in the WAC, so we weren't playing teams like Oklahoma or Georgia or any, you know. So to know that we were having one of the big dogs was pretty cool, and we knew right away that, I mean, it was a celebration, but we knew that we were going to have to go to work, so we didn't want to get embarrassed.
When you're watching them on film and you're getting closer to that game, what do you remember just about your mental thoughts going in? I mean, did you guys truly believe you were going to win the game? I mean, did you look at the film going, you know, holy crap? I mean, what was your mindset going into that game?
Yeah, so like I was saying earlier, the focus going into that season was so crucial, and then going into the Fiesta Bowl in particular, I mean, Coach Pete had us so dialed and so focused. It was about a month from the last game to the Fiesta Bowl, so winter break, and we were all still in Boise practicing, and everyone was staying out of trouble, and everyone was finished with finals, so everyone was eligible and whatnot. And I remember just sitting there in a team meeting, and Coach Pete was so focused, and that just kind of fed the players like, hey, Pete is in the zone, like, it's on, you know. So, I mean, great leadership by the coaches, and we had a great game plan. Watching film, at first you're like, Oklahoma, these guys are studs, but then you start watching film, and they make mistakes just like we make mistakes. They make good plays like we make good plays, and, you know, we were able to really hone in and try to focus on their weaknesses and try to attack those. And you get a game plan, you start believing, and you go with it.
And I think a lot of people forget, because you had to run all those trick plays, you guys actually had a nice lead earlier in the game, and you might not have needed, you know, some of those trick plays. And then they made kind of a furious comeback there. You know, I think there was a fluke play, and then the pick
ball
six,
bounce,
obviously. And and all of a sudden, you guys are needing these trick plays. You know, we'll fast forward to your play, because that's what everybody talks about, you know. And I guess, what was it, the game before or earlier that season, you guys had run a similar play, but you had kept the ball and run, right?
Yeah, it was against Nevada the last game of the year, and same exact play. except for mine, was just it was just a designed run.
Okay.
And it worked. We were about on the 4, 5, 6 yard line, and it worked. We scored a touchdown on it. It was flipped, so it was on the other side of the field, and we figured that, you know, Coach Bobby Stoops probably did his homework, kind of saying, hey, if number 19 is in at quarterback or like a wildcat formation, then it's probably going to be a sweep, you know, to either side, to the strong side or whatever. And so the coaches, our coaches are like, hey, if they're doing their homework, you know, let's try to draw something off of that formation and that look. And so the play was designed to, you know, mimic the exact same play, and except for we flipped it.
So you didn't put that play in till the prep for that game.
Exactly. So okay. It was always a run, and then going into the game, we turned, you know, it was like sell the run and then pull up and throw the pass. So yeah, we had that game plan. I mean, we had a ton of special plays that going into that. Like every week we had a ton of specials. We'd call them.
Yeah.
Just a lot of the time we didn't need to use them, and
sure.
And this time we needed to use them, so we did.
What were you thinking? Whether when you're practicing it, I mean, were you thinking, okay, it's nice to have this, but we're not going to use it? Or I mean, were you thinking during the game at some point? I mean, what was just the thought? I guess leading up to that, did you think you're actually going to have a chance to run that play?
Or? Yeah, we ran it probably like 8 times during full team looks.
Okay. Is that, you know, a lot for the bowl.
Yeah, it's a lot for for a special play in particular. So I figured that, you know, just, you know, first, second, third, early fourth quarter would be a play, you know, on like a second down or something.
Okay.
And definitely not on a 4th and 2 or 4th and 3 with the game on the line. So was prepared for it, just wasn't prepared for it in that situation.
Yeah. And I know we've talked about it before, but what did you remember when you heard the play call? Or
yeah, I remember running out there saying, I forget what the group was called, you know, maybe it was like, Falcon 19 or, because I was number 19, I forget. But I remember running out there saying, all right, this is my package. I get to go out and run a play. And then when I was running out, I was like, oh, man, we only have one play out of this package. I can't believe we're doing this. You know, it's either going to be really good, it's going to work, or the game's going to be over if it doesn't.
Yeah, have you thought about that? I mean, it was literally that. I mean, so much had to happen up to that point. The hook and ladder had to work. The Statue of Liberty had to work. But I mean, if somebody breaks through the line and gets you and doesn't allow you to throw it, or if Schumann can't get off the block and can't get open there, and if anything doesn't happen perfectly, I mean, you guys,
they look at me, they're like, he's the guy who threw the pass.
Well, maybe not that. I mean, maybe they look at Coach Harson or Coach Pete for calling that play in that situation.
Yeah,
the story is a lot different.
It is.
And I mean, there's a chance that Boise State's not, you know, what they are today. Probably a good chance, at least, and because of all the individual things that happened in that game, and you have a part of that. You thought about that? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And Coach Pete and Harsh would have said, what are you doing putting the ball in the hands of an ex-walk-on wide receiver throwing the final pass in the Fiesta Bowl? It doesn't work. What were you guys thinking? Mm-hmm. You know, I think about that. I think about I probably wouldn't be living in Boise if it didn't work out, or say, I don't want to be remembered as that guy, you know, who couldn't execute the play. I better leave town or something, you know. But, it was pretty cool that they put their trust in me to get the play done. And, I mean, I didn't do much. I just ran about 5 yards to the right, threw the ball up, and shoe went up and caught it. So, yeah, just happy that it worked out, really.
I mean, do you like the fact that that's the play everybody reminds? I mean, you played 4 years here.
Yeah.
You did a lot of great things, but, I mean, that's the play.
Yeah, that's what they remember.
I mean, that's why I'm talking to you.
I get it. You know, that's what when people think of Boise State football, they think of, you know, of that game, you know, put us on the map. And, you know, I just so happened to be involved with that play, and that's what they remember, so. It's all good.
Yeah.
I guess I'd rather be remembered as somebody who participated rather than, you know, than not. So
one more on that play. I mean, just what do you remember about just when you even right, you know, right when you're throwing it, he's still not even open or doesn't look like it. I mean, what would just kind of, you know, take me through kind of what you're thinking and how the play kind of developed?
Yeah, I think a lot of that was on Derek Schumann, the tight end, obviously Shue. He just did a great job because he really had to sell the run on his end and then release to the corner. So, you know, if he doesn't sell it, that running back or that linebacker would have just ran right there with him. So he really made that linebacker believe, you know, that he was, you know, truly blocking. Mm-hmm. And then he was able to release. So he was able to get a couple steps ahead of the defender. So, I mean, he was the guy who really made that play work. And then the offensive lineman and the other guys out there really selling a run. So I didn't do much. They made the play happen.
how often do you get asked about that, whether it be by fans or media, or how often do you see the clip? I mean, living in town, you can't escape it. I know it's probably a cool feeling, but how often do you think about that, or does someone bring that up to you around town or something?
Yeah, especially whenever I see people who I might still kind of know a little bit, especially like around work, you know, people always want to talk about it, and it's totally cool. I'll talk about it. It doesn't bug me or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's people still talk about it, you know, and they probably look at me and they're like, I can't believe you scrawny little dude was involved in that.
It's got to be a cool feeling, though.
Yeah, it was cool, man. It was cool. And
I mean, even now, just having people that want to say, oh, you're the guy that threw the pass, you know, I mean, it's got to be kind of cool that people do still, almost 11 years later, you know, want to talk about it and ask you about it.
Yeah, definitely didn't to be involved in that game and something that the community was so proud of. I mean, that whole year afterwards, it seemed like everybody was just on a Boise State Bronco high.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially for the town of Boise and the BSU fans who were so great, especially, you know, when I was playing there, to be able to see them happy and, you know, just know that you had some sort of involvement in that game that helped change the program and probably helped change the city as well.
Yeah.
And the school and everything was something special, and I take pride in.
And you were only a sophomore that year, so I mean, you had two more seasons after that. You have the parade and all that. I mean, what was that like that next season, trying to, after you had done all that, to try to gear up to do it again?
Yeah, so definitely a lot of high expectations, especially now at Boise. I mean, people expect you to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes if you go 10-3, people aren't happy,
sure,
which to me is a good season.
Yeah.
So you could tell that the expectations have changed drastically. So going to that season, we knew that we were coming off the best season in school history, maybe along with that 1980 team. And we knew that we had big shoes to fill. We knew that we had a lot of talent that had left. Like I was saying, a bunch of seniors had gone to the NFL, so we knew we had big shoes to fill. And so we knew that we had to work hard in the off season and, you know, coming ready to go, because the bullseye, Coach Pete always talked about the bullseye on Boise State's chest. Everybody wants to take us down now, you know. So,
when you got hurt that year, unfortunately, right?
Yeah, I think it was my third game. Yeah,
I think you played four games in the season. So
yeah, unfortunately, that stunk because, you know, I earned a starting spot as a wideout, and you know, had high expectations for myself, and just that offense was so fun. We knew we were throwing the ball a lot, you know, because the running game was allowing us to do that.
Sure.
So I was expecting to have a big season. You know, unfortunately, I think it was up at UW. I dislocated my shoulder, and I started wearing the brace and doing therapy, and kept dislocating to the point where if I reached above my head to go catch a ball, it was just dislocating.
Oh, and man!
I knew that it was either get surgery, or in the off season I might not be. If I got the surgery then I might not be ready to go for my senior year. And the doctors were like, hey, man, you should probably get this fixed. So that was a tough pill to swallow. That stunk. I was, you know, still look back and upset about that. But fortunately, I was able to get to 100% after that surgery and get back from my senior year, which was an awesome season.
Yeah, 36 catches, 578 receiving yards, two touchdowns receiving, I believe. The team goes 12-0 in the regular season.
Yeah.
But then you're stuck going to the Poinsettia Bowl, right, against TCU.
Yeah.
Well, how hard was that to take, I guess, where you guys went undefeated and then you guys kind of got put in maybe a lower-tier bowl than you'd liked?
Yeah, that was a tough deal. So it was Utah that season, went undefeated as well.
Yep.
And they were in the Mountain West, and, you know, the whole strength of schedule with a whack for some Mountain West at that time, you know, they gave Utah the nod ahead of us. And they actually went to the Sugar Bowl that year and spanked Alabama. So, you know, they proved that they were, you know, the team to go. And obviously we wanted to be the team that went. But we had a great bowl game in the Poinsettia Bowl against, I think it was a one-loss TCU and Andy Dalton. And that Coach Patterson was doing good things down there. So I think the Poinsettia Bowl that year was pretty stoked having an undefeated Boise State. And I think it was a one-loss TCU team. So that was a great matchup. And man, that's one game that I look back and bummed about, because we had so many opportunities that game. And
17-16, I believe.
Yeah, 17-16. And, yeah, we had some just unfortunate breaks. And I look back, especially we play that game in my hometown. And I'm like, dang, I wish we would have won that one, the last one, finishing the career. So yeah, still think about that one a lot, too.
Well, you know, after that, obviously, did you go to the combine?
No, I didn't.
Okay, you had some, I saw some stats where you had like a measurements for the combine or something. Maybe it was from Pro Day.
Yeah, it was Pro Day.
Okay. But what was that like for you, just that kind of process and trying to continue your career? And then, you know, you don't get drafted, but you did sign a free agent deal with the Vikings, I believe, on the same day as Ian Johnson did, right?
Yep. So it was just finished that senior year and had a decent year. Our team did great. And a lot of guys were contemplating, hey, should we do pro day, yes or no? And I'm like, hey, might as well get, I don't want to have any regrets not giving a shot at the next level. So I decided I'd train for it and be all in, do the best that I could at pro day, try to open up some eyes and try to earn a shot at the next level. So, man, I grinded for about 3 months and was probably in the best shape of my life. And I had set a bunch of goals for my pro day with numbers, and you know, you have the 40 and the shuttle and the bench and all that. So I was able to attain all the goals that I set out. I said, hey, if I can get to these goals, then it should open some eyes and maybe somebody will give me a look. And I was able to attest it really well. I signed as a free agent with the Vikings.
Were you hoping to get drafted? I mean, I was doing some research on you, and Mel Kiper Jr., you know, the draft guru, had this quote about you at the time. He said, an underneath threat with an ability to make things happen after the catch, and he called you a poor man's Wes Welker at the time.
Yep.
And, you know, for a guy like Mel Kiper Jr. to be, you know, single, I don't remember the context in terms of if it was on TV or what, but, you know, was it disappointing you didn't get drafted? Were you thinking that's probably what it was going to be? Or,
you know, it was interesting. Just that whole process was so funny. I mean, you get an agent, and then, you know, these NFL teams start sending you letters saying, hey, you're a prospect for us. And I went on a trip to Minnesota at the Vikings. And, and I'm like, you know, I think some teams are interested, but you never really know. So you always hope. I'm like, you know what? I tested good enough. If it does happen, it would be late in the seventh round or it'd be a free agent deal.
Okay.
And so right in the middle of the seventh round, a bunch of teams started calling me and saying, hey, you know, our draft picks are done, but we want you to be signed as a free agent. And so I think it was, yeah, like five or six teams.
Okay, so you had some options then.
Yeah, I had some options, and just talking with my agent, he thought that the Vikings would be the best fit. And just at that time, they offered the most money, which, you know, to other draft picks was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he thought that it was the best fit, and so we went with Minnesota.
Did you know that Ian was signing with them too then?
Or no, I didn't.
Time? Okay.
Nope, I didn't. So, you know, and I think it turned out to be the right decision. I mean, made the practice squad, and for my first job out of college, it was lucrative. And,
yeah.
You know, it was a good choice.
So you spent the first year there, that was what, 08, I guess, on the practice squad. How much did you make on the practice squad?
Man, I think it did. That year, they were probably, if you made it through the whole season, they give us around like $90,000 or something. Then once you get into the playoffs, they give you a little bump for that as well. So I remember, funny story about that. That was the season that Brett Favre came back to the Minnesota Vikings.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, longtime Green Bay Packer. I think he sat out a year, and then the Vikings had a great team, and they had a couple of veteran quarterbacks battling for the quarterback position, but they knew that if they could take Brett Favre or pick him up, you know, that they'd be able to take that next leap, and had a great year that year. Then went NFC Championship game and could have beat the Saints and gone on to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But funny thing, talking about the paychecks, I remember my first paycheck. So that year we got paid every other week. So once every 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
And that season, Brett Favre signed a one-year, $16 million deal. And so every 2 weeks, he's making $2 million. So 16, so you're making $1 million, 16 games in a season, you're making $1 million a game.
Wow.
You know? And so every 2 weeks, we got our paycheck, and they'd give you like a little copy of your check statement. And I remember getting my first paycheck for 2 weeks of practice squad, and I was a couple thousand bucks, and coming from a $600 scholarship check every
good,
month.
Cool
I was like,
you,
I'm the man. This is the best day ever, you know? It was so awesome and had a big smile on my face and was texting my folks and my fiance at the time. I'm like, I'm so pumped. And I remember Favre came walking by me. He's like, Vinny, why you got a big old grin on your face, boy? You know, with his southern accent. I said, dude, look at this, you know? This is the best payday of my life. He's like, you want to see a big boy check? And he showed me his little check statement. It was $1 million. So 2 weeks, $2 million after taxes, was just over $1 million. I'm like, dang.
Wow.
That's when you know you've made it, man.
Wow.
That's why he's one of the GOATs.
You want to see a big boy paycheck.
That's awesome. A big boy check. Here you go, Vinny.
Was he a cool guy or what was it like? There was a lot of media and stuff around there.
Yeah, super cool guy and just taking the time to talk to me, a free agent, you know, Slappy. Was pretty cool, and he was great dude, great sense of humor. He was always joking around, and you know, was a great good old boy, good dude.
So I'm sure you caught some passes from him and stuff in practice, or
yeah,
wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, every time I was going to catch a ball that he threw, I'm like, dude, this is from Brett Favre. I was thinking that in the play, I'm like, he's throwing it to me. So that was pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't put the connection together with Brett Favre being there that year. And
yeah.
So how did it end for you? You know, you finished the practice squad. You finished that year.
Yep, finished that year. And it was just one of those things, man. I've at that time, you know, I always loved playing ball. They asked me to come back the next year to go through, like, off-season workouts and get invited back to training camp and re-signed, like, a deal. You know, if I was to make the team and came back to Boise and, you know, I had enough, man. I chose to leave the game on my terms, which was tough, you know, and I was just kind of spent on ball. And so I talked to my dad about it. He played and, you know, he had to make a decision when he was playing. So he's like, hey, man, he's like, don't think about you don't play this game because of the money. You play because it's fun, right? Like, the minute the game stops being fun, even though the money's good, you're not doing it for that. You're playing for the love of the game. And the minute you stop having fun is probably when you should call it a quit, or else it's going to suck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of, you know, it was a different deal. It was a little bit of a transition. And, you know, I just figured, I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to stay back in Boise. I was getting married. And, I just called it. It was just like that, and looking back, people are like, what was he thinking, probably, you know? But I'm totally good. I've made the decision. At the time, it was the right thing for me, and now I'm back in Boise and working, got my family, and I'm happy, so it's good.
You think about that time, and hey, you know, you were an NFL player. You may not have, you know, may not have gotten into a regular season game or anything, but I mean, do you still have, like, a Vikings jersey framed hanging up or anything?
I got my jersey from that year, playing the preseason games, and then they had it. You know, I was, you know, one injury away from getting pulled up. Never happened. It's not like I was cheering for it to happen. You don't want to see anybody go down. But I was always ready, and it was a great season. But I still got, like, some Viking gear. And
that's cool.
So I figured I'd save it, because my dad, when he played, he saved a bunch of his own stuff. So growing up, I would always rifle through that, and I'm like, dude, this is San Diego Chargers. So I saved some of it.
It'd be cool for your kids
thinking
someday.
That if I had a couple boys one day, they might enjoy it. So, yeah, I saved that.
Did you get much action in the preseason that year? Or?
Yeah, I got some good looks in the preseason. And
was that pretty cool?
It was super cool. I remember the first game. We traveled to Indianapolis, and I saw Brett Favre running out in the field to warm up. Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you have Brett Favre, you have Peyton Manning. I was, like, in awe because, I love football growing up, watching those guys. And when I was a kid and in high school, and to be on the field with them, you know, I was starstruck. And, I remember one play in particular in Indianapolis. I was on punt team. I was a gunner, so I was one of those guys who runs down and tries to tackle and had these two defensive backs who were jamming me, and I got off the line, and one guy was in my hip pocket, and I was running down. I'm like, where'd that other guy go? And all of a sudden, boom, just blindside, and I got lit up, and that was like my welcome to the league moment, you know. And I was like, man, I got I got a ringer, and I was like, man, that was not right. Mm-hmm. You know, that did not feel right from my head, but, you know, it was a pretty cool experience to get to go play.
You know, and then you kind of transformed into the next phase in your life. You know, a lot of your former teammates, you know, Schumann now is back working at Boise State and stuff. You ever think about getting into coaching? Or?
You know, I love ball. You know, it's one of those things you think about it, you know, often just trying to get back around the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, right now I enjoy what I'm doing and enjoy where I'm at. But you always think about it because that's what you know. That's what you truly, truly love. You know, it's a game, but you can't, you know, for a lot of people, you know, you got to go out and try to make a living. And for the coaching staff, I mean, you can do that, but it's a grind too. You got to be all in. And right now probably fine, but it's definitely things that I've thought about in the past for sure.
What's it like for you? I mean, you mentioned Lee Marks, a guy that was there, and now he's coaching at BSU. And you mentioned Ridd, and obviously Harsin, and I know there's a lot of, you know, I'm Schumann. There's a lot of other guys too. I mean, what's it like for you?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it like for you to be in Boise and watching all these guys that you either worked under or were friends with or played with that are now all back at BSU?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, like Harsin was there, Lee, Avalos, Ridd was the guy who recruited me. Pitt was there. Yeah. Pitt used to kick my butt in workouts and so it's cool. And now I go back all the time, and knowing that, you know, they welcome me back, I could go
see you practice and stuff.
Yeah,
cool.
I take my boys out to practice, and you know, they love it, and it's pretty cool to see those guys in charge of the program now. And man, I think I'm probably their number one fan. You don't want to watch a Boise game with me, man, because I go crazy. But it's awesome to know that those guys are taking care of the program. You know, the program's in good shape with those guys.
And what are you doing these days? You're working for a medical sales company? Or?
Yeah, I work for a company called Strike Orthopedics. So we supply joint replacement implants and instrumentation to the orthopedic surgeons here in town. So whenever somebody goes to get a total knee or a total hip replacement, we go into surgery, we bring the instruments, the implants, and we're kind of like a caddy to a golfer. We're like a caddy to the surgeon, and we're supposed to be the experts on our product. And so we're there and to make sure that everything goes smooth on our end.
Well, I guess final thing, man, and I really appreciate your time today, but just to, I mean, it seems like you're happy, you're kind of living life. I mean, you're in Boise, you got, you know, two kids, a wife, you're in the town where you were, you know, a Bronco legend, so to speak, as we do the podcast here. I mean, what you just think of the path that got you to this point? I mean, it's got to be a pretty cool that the journey you've been on and where you are right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's special. I mean, I love, you know, stick around in Boise, and just the decision to come up here, you know, changed my whole life, really. I mean, coming up here and making it work to the Fiesta Bowl, everybody, you know, wants to talk to me and remembers me about, you know, about that. And, you know, it's just awesome knowing that, you know, I was a part of that program, got my college degree, which is a great accomplishment. And then met my wife in the athletic dorms there. So just the whole decision in general to come up to Boise, you know, definitely has gotten to me where I'm at today. And I'm in a good spot, so yeah, it was totally all worth it.
Well, I think, you know, you joke that you would have had to move if the pass was incomplete.
Yeah.
I think Boise State fans are happy you're still here and happy that all worked out.
Yeah,
It's been pretty cool last, you know, 10, 11 years to see the program kind of become what it's become, and obviously you played a big part in that, and I appreciate your time today, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, BJ, thanks, man. I appreciate you meeting up with me. Thank you.
Well, there he is, Vinny Perrette. I really appreciate his time. Great stuff. I was loving the story about the this is a big boy paycheck, Vinny, when he's talking about with Brett Favre about the difference in their paycheck sizes. That was good stuff. And again, you know, he's one of those guys that probably gets asked about the Fiesta Bowl almost every day. Lives in town, but he's okay with it. I mean, it was one of the greatest moments of his life, and you know, you still see him doing autograph signings here and there, and speaking engagements and things like that. But why not? I mean, that's a heck of a game and a memory forever that you're going to want to talk about. So really appreciate Vinny Perrette, this week's guest on the Bronco Legends podcast. A programming note: next week's guest, how about this? Chuck Pagano. Chuck Pagano, the former head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, is our guest. And you might ask, why is he our guest on a Boise State Legends podcast? Well, he coached 2 years at Boise State. He got his full-time coaching career as the linebackers coach for Boise State in 1985. 2007 and 1988. So I had to think of the years there for a second. But he got his full-time coaching start at Boise State, and he's going to be our guest next week. Great stuff. Looking forward to having Chuck Pagano on the Bronco Legends podcast. Again, BJ Raines, R-A-I-N-S, at idahopress.com. If you have any questions or concerns with the podcast, hope you'll tell your friends, share it on social media, and let's make this the biggest, baddest podcast we can. Really appreciate your time. Hope you have a great week. Hope you enjoyed the interview. We'll talk to you later at blueturfsports.com.